and welcome to the Law Matters program for another fortnight. Good to have your company. Jodie Hoffman in the studio with you this hour. This program is brought to you, well, since 2010, by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Big show coming your way today. Hope you can stay tuned. Going to be talking with the Human Rights Law Centre about a new report, Ending Strip Searching in Australian Prisons. There are calls for strip searches in Australian prisons to be banned in law by all governments in Australia. That's coming up in the second half of our program. Before that, though, chatting with Chloe Wood, who is from the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA, manager of the Civil and Human Rights Law Unit. We're going to be talking about Haykia Prison. Certainly nothing new to talking about Haykia on this program. Lots of unrest within the prison, and families and our own organisation still raising concerns over lockdowns at Haykia. Concerns are not new. Last year, a follow-up report by the Inspector of Custodial Services, Eamon Ryan, found that conditions at the prison remained entirely unacceptable. Nearly a year after the 2024 inspection raised concerns that prisoners were being held in inhumane conditions. Now, this is an issue that the Aboriginal Legal Service is always advocating for. So Chloe Wood will bring us up to date with what the ALS is doing in regard to ongoing concerns at Haykia Prison in Perth. Let's kick it off with some music, though. This is from the Warrumpi Band and a song called Julpin.
We'll be right back.
Yeah, there's the Wurrumbi Band kicking off Law Matters for another fortnight. Welcome to the program. Shout out to our listeners listening through the National Indigenous Radio Service, also Wurrungarri Media in Kununurra, and 6DBY Lakati Media in Derby. Good to have you coming. And of course, from Boorloo, we come to you each fortnight from the studios of Noongar Radio in Beaufort Street in Perth. Big program. As I mentioned, in the second half, we're talking about a new report about strip searches and the indignity of it all and the unnecessariness of it all, if that's even a word. Talking with the Human Rights Law Centre in the second half of the program. But first, and the topic I would love not to have to talk about, but it's over continued poor conditions at Hakea Prison in Perth. Last year, a follow-up report by the Inspector of Custodial Services, Eamon Ryan, found that conditions at the prison remained entirely unacceptable, nearly a year after a report inspection that raised concerns that prisoners were being held in inhumane conditions. The findings also uncovered overcrowding, with some prisoners sleeping besides toilets, and said men faced immense difficulty contacting family, raising compliance concerns under the prison's regulations of 1982. Mr. Ryan also recently told the National Indigenous Times that the conditions of Hakea have probably got worse since his last report. Chloe Wood is the manager of the Human Rights and Civil Law Unit at the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA. She joins us on the line. Chloe, thank you for your time.
Hi, Jodie. Thanks for having me.
Chloe, Hakea is not a new issue that the Aboriginal Legal Service is having to deal with. We're hearing a lot of unrest about the conditions at lockdowns. For the benefit of our national listeners, can you just paint a picture of some of the issues that have evolved in recent years out of Hakea Prison, please?
Sure. Well, what we've seen, Jodie, in the past years at Hakea are the pressures that have been caused by a growing prison population and issues with the prison being able to cope with that prison population and not, you know, following their own rules and regulations for how to treat. And it's really dispiriting to see how the prisoners at Hakea have been over the last few years. They've been subjected to extensive lockdown cells, which means that they have very limited access to services, and they include services like access to treatment and mental health support. They're also subjected to really terrible cells. The overcrowding means that a lot of people are being housed in cells only in people, but they're holding three times more people in those cells. We've had reports of issues of pests in the cells, cockroaches and rats, and unhygiene in general, with access to proper laundry services, showers and other basic entitlement. People just aren't, and it has been going on now, as you and Jodie, for several years. And unfortunately, this year it's to deteriorate at Hakea.
Look, this must be so concerning, not just for those in prison, but for their families and loved ones on the outside. We already know that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are overrepresented within the prison system. And there are also a lot more health challenges faced by a lot of our mob on the inside and the outside. I'm presuming that, you know, when you're locked down for, you know, 23 hours a day and you're not getting access to the services or the health needs that you require, it's also difficult to maintain that contact with the people you need to keep you healthy on the inside.
That's right. And we know that access to social restricted and people aren't getting contact with the families and support network that they need. And as you mentioned, lockdowns have an incredible psychological impact on people. Imagine being held in a room for 24 hours or more a day with nothing to do, staring at four walls, and you get a sense of what it might be like for somebody in those conditions. It's really a crisis at Hakea Prison at the moment, and something that the Government of Western Australia needs to treat as a crisis and address as soon as possible.
There's been claims that you know, twice as many men are sleeping in the one cell that the cell is designed for. So, say a two-person cell might have four people in it. We're finding that people are frightened. People are really frightened that, and they're going inside and they're getting this treatment and they're coming out and, you know, they're not happy because they've been put in these dire circumstances within prison. And you don't lose your rights because you're locked up. You are, you know, meant to be getting looked after by the state. Are you shocked that, you know, Eamon Ryan says that, you know, looks like the conditions are actually getting worse?
Am I shocked that they're getting worse?
Yeah, that the government is obviously not, you know, prioritising that things need to change and now?
Yeah, I am shocked that it's getting worse and that Mr. Ryan has said that it's getting worse, because they've known about these issues for many years now, and they've told us that they're putting measures in place to try and address the issues, like more funding, a specific HAKEA task force within the department. But it's clear that those initiatives are just not sufficient to address the current crisis, and more needs to be done because people's basic human rights are being violated at the moment at HAKEA prison, and it's just not something that can be allowed to continue.
What involvement does the Aboriginal Legal Service have with people inside HAKEA and in terms of, you know, listening to their concerns?
We have quite a well-established prison accountability service at the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA, and we've been supporting prisoners at HAKEA prison for the last several years with their concerns about their treatment and conditions. And that might include things like making sort of one-off requests for support for those people, so access to medical treatment, access to mental health supports, increased contact with loved ones. And it has also included comprehensive complaints that we've been sending to the Commissioner for Corrective Services, outlining our clients' experiences in HAKEA and asking that those conditions and treatment be fully investigated by the department to get our clients' experiences on the record and to try and establish some accountability for the department to take some action in respect of those matters.
I'm speaking with Chloe Wood, Manager of the Civil and Human Rights Unit at the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, talking about ongoing issues at HAKEA prison for inmates and continued lockdowns. And I think the whole purpose of prison is meant to be for rehabilitation, but there's no way that can be happening when the ongoing conditions clearly reflect a deeper systemic failure within Western Australia, hey?
That's right. And I think Inspector Ryan described it as being, it's just a warehouse at the moment. It's just holding people in a place subjected to terrible conditions. There's no rehabilitation happening whatsoever when people can only get out of their cell for an hour or two and sometimes less. We've heard reports from people coming out of the prison system who then say it's extremely hard for them to readjust back to being in community because of the long-lasting impacts that solitary confinement has had on them whilst they've been in custody. So it doesn't end even when you're released back into the community. It's very hard for people to readjust after experiencing the kind of psychological distress that they experience during lockdowns and the conditions at HAKEA prison.
The WA government has been made aware of the conditions, not just by the Aboriginal Legal Service, but by a whole heap of other key stakeholders within the justice system in this state for many, many years. The situation is not getting better. Since December 2024, the ALS has lodged formal complaints with the Commissioner of Corrective Services on behalf of more than 40 clients at HAKEA. Is that number continuing to grow, Chloe?
It's continuing to grow. It's going to be up to more than 50 very soon. And we've probably spoken to over 60 people overall from HAKEA prison. So I think that number is just going to continue to grow.
And those complaints detail endemic overcrowding, relentless lockdowns, unhygienic conditions, inadequate access to mental and physical health care. And clients continue to report being confined to their cells for entire days or receiving only minimal time out. Lockdown is a terrible thing because I imagine it affects you not just physically but mentally as well, Chloe.
It has an incredible psychological impact, and there's been lots of academic work done on the impact of solitary confinement on people, but certainly both the physical and psychological impacts are significant and have really long-lasting implications for people.
What happens when you speak to people on the inside and they tell you about the conditions that they're living in within Haikia Prison? What happens with the information that you take? What's the next process that the ALS does legally?
Well, at the moment, we're focusing on complaints for people. So as I described before, that might look like, for example, an urgent request for medical assistance or other supports if that person is sort of in dire need of urgent assistance. And we're taking instructions for comprehensive complaints about the lockdowns and treatment and conditions at Haikia. And those complaints are being sent to the Commissioner for Corrective Services, and all of our clients' instructions are on the record about what's happening at Haikia. We're asking for it to be fully investigated. And we're also doing a lot of ongoing advocacy and policy work with the government to try and improve conditions at Haikia Prison.
Do you have a message for people on the inside in terms of, you know, they have not been forgotten, that people are working vehemently on the outside to make sure that there are improvements made?
Yes, I think I would just say to them that we are working on this. So to anybody on the inside, to any families with people on the inside, we're trying to support people as best we can. Please get in touch with us. We'll do as much as we can to support people who are experiencing these terrible conditions and treatment, and we'll try and hold the government to account as best we can.
All right. Chloe Wood, thank you for your time on Law Matters. Appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Jodie.
Chloe Wood, Manager of the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA Civil and Human Rights Unit, talking about Haikia Prison. Let's have a listen to Coloured Stone, a song called Human Love. Ah, that is Bunna Laurie and Coloured Stone. God, human love. I reckon they've been making music, must be around 40 years at least. This is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Jodie Hoffman in the studio with you this hour. Thank you for your time. It might shock you to find out that 15,000 strip searches are conducted in Australian prisons every month. But the contraband detection rate is less than 1%. So why are we still subjecting people to this invasive and often traumatising practice? Very shortly on the program, I'm going to be chatting with Nina Story, Family Violence Justice Project Manager at Flatout and a Fig Jam member. She was involved in a new report that has come out through the Human Rights Law Centre. I'll also be chatting with one of the lawyers involved in the compilation of that report, Sahini Mehta, a senior lawyer at the Human Rights Law Centre. But we'll have some more music, but when we come back, we'll talk about the invasive practice of strip searches within the prisons. Here is the Kid Laroi.
You say you don't go out, but somehow I always see you. It's just to get dressed up. Behind the pictures you keep to. It's different tonight. You looked in my eyes, and now, girl, you're all that I see. You're closing the space, a smile on your face. I know that you're locked in with me. How does it feel? It's me.
The Kid Laroi here on the Law Matters program. Jodie Hoffman with you on the program this hour. Thank you for your company. And we're going to be talking about strip searches in Australian prisons. There is a new report that calls for a ban on strip searching in prisons, an unnecessary and deeply harmful practice. Degrading, harmful. It should be banned in law by all governments, according to a new report released recently by the Human Rights Law Centre, Flatout, and formerly Incarcerated Girls Justice Advocates of Melbourne. We'll call them Fig Jam. Joining me on the program to let me know more is Nina Story, Family Violence Justice Project Manager at Flatout and Fig Jam member. Welcome to the program, Nina. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much for having me on.
You know, I wish that, you know, the nature of this program is that we quite often have to talk about issues that are very hard to hear, unpleasant to talk about, but even more unpleasant to know that practices exist within our prisons throughout Australia. We know that First Nations peoples are overrepresented within the prison system. We've just been talking earlier on the program about, you know, Haykia Prison and continued lockdowns and, you know, cells taking twice as many people as they should. Now we're going to be talking about strip searches, and it's just incredible to think that 15,000 strip searches are conducted in Australian prisons every month, but the contraband detection rate is less than 1%, which begs the question, well, why do it? Nina, let's first talk about who you are and your involvement in the report.
Sure, thank you. My name's Nina, and as you already mentioned, I work at Flat Out and I'm also a proud FigGen member. I'd also like to acknowledge that I'm coming to you from Bunurong country down in otherwise known Phillip Island, and feel very honoured to be here on the show today. I'm not a First Nations person, but I am a settler here, and yeah, want to just acknowledge that First Nations people are completely disproportionately subjected to and harmed by strip searching because of their mass incarceration. And yeah, as you mentioned, like, you know, it's a really, really important issue to talk about. I think, you know, you can't really describe how a strip search affects you until you have gone through it. Like, you know, even though, you know, folks and community are aware of these practices taking place in prison, until you're actually strip searched, it really can't be described to you on how significantly traumatizing that is. And we know too from, you know, data collected around the country that about 80 to 90% of women have experienced sexual abuse prior to them entering the prison system. So it is really re-traumatizing. And yeah, I think too that, like, you know, every person in prison deserves dignity. But they are subjected to these searches repeatedly, and they're invasive and deeply humiliating. A lot of women, when, you know, they come into the system, they might have been held in cells for days on end, and so, you know, haven't had access to sanitary items, or, you know, whether it was the choice of their own or whether they didn't have access, they might have been in watch houses and so forth, mm-hmm. where they haven't had access to showers. And so, you know, being strip searched when you're menstruating without being able to clean yourself is deeply humiliating, on top of, you know, experiencing that sexual abuse.
The report is called Ending Strip Searching in Australian Prisons. It compiles lived experience accounts of being subjected to strip searching alongside national data on the prevalence of strip searching in prisons. The key findings were that there was actually no evidence of any relationship between strip searching and contraband detection. That in itself would lead you to think, well, why do it? Incredibly traumatic to women, to trans and gender diverse people who have already endured sexual abuse at the hands of the state, and highlights the harmful, unnecessary and effective nature of strip searches. What have you been able to contribute to the report and those around you, Nina?
Yeah, I think it was strangely a really therapeutic process for so many lived experience folks to be participating in the report. And, you know, I think too that consistently, like, we're shamed for our experiences, and it can be really dangerous actually to speak up against state violence, particularly for folks that are still tethered to the system, for example, are on parole or on a corrections order. And so the system can actually push back and further punish people for speaking out. So I just want to give a massive shout out to each and every person that was involved in the report, FigGen members, Beyond Bricks and Bars Advisory Board, and also Aunt Vicky Roach, who has been so deadly in the space and wrote the foreword and has continued, you know, has been doing this fight, as have Flat Out, for the last 35 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just so grateful for being partnered with the Human Rights Law Centre, who have for years done extensive FOIs to be able to collect the data. So, you know, to really elevate the voices of the lived experience folks with that data is like a really strong, you know, just really, really strong. It can't be denied. And I think that, you know, as a lived experience advocate, when I tell my story, it can be dismissed as unique or just one person's experience. But having so many collective voices come forward alongside all the data, it really can't be dismissed. It's like clear, hard, exposed, hard truth.
My guest on Law Matters is Nina Story, and sharing her thoughts on strip searching in Australian prisons. Imagine for an adult it's extremely traumatic, Nina, but hearing that it also happens to children who are forced to strip search as well, I'm just wondering what that does to a person psychologically moving forward.
Yeah, it can actually be like really, really traumatizing for young people. We incarcerate children across this country that are subjected to sexual abuse at the hands of the state, which is strip searching, but I'd call it for what it is, sexual assault at the hands of the state. And so these young people that are in prisons held across the country are strip searched by adults. And just think of that like power dynamic. Also, we've got reports and instances of babies being strip searched when they're coming in for visits.
Okay.
So officers will open up their nappies and strip search the children. And, you know, so many women, trans and gender diverse, and men will choose not to have a visit because they don't want their loved ones subjected to these practices. So it doesn't just harm and traumatise the folks that are inside, but also their family and their friends. And, you know, connection to the outside and the support of their family and friends and those visits can really mean the world to somebody. And so you can see that, like, you know, indicating that that's not something that they want to go through with is like a huge safety precaution and really subjects them to further isolation. And yeah, I mean, you know, there's absolutely no reason that we need to be strip searching people. We really want to abolish it in law. And further on from the report, we've started a campaign. So you can find that at www.endstripsearching.com. And please sign the petition. There's absolutely no reason for governments to subject people to this practice. As we've already talked about, it's really humiliating, scars people for life. And authorities do have access to safer, less intrusive and more effective alternatives like scanners, similar to the ones that you would see at the airport, and also wands like that detect substances on the clothing. So it's not like, you know, it's not a safety issue like what we are led to believe. Like, so much of prison language frames these dehumanising, traumatising, violent acts as safety, but we have to be really, really careful and really listen to what lived experience people are saying. There are less intrusive alternatives.
Nina Story, you're a member of Fig Jam, collective of formerly incarcerated justice advocates based in Melbourne, and Family Violence Justice Project Coordinator at Flat Out. I imagine it's a very difficult process to talk about the trauma of going through a strip search, particularly when it's not necessary. Has it been cathartic to meet with other people in the same situation who collectively you've all been able to share your stories for the benefit of hopeful change and implementation of new laws by the government?
Yeah, it's been actually like really emotional, really empowering. And I think too, like, you know, standing in solidarity with women, trans and gender diverse people and talking about our experiences in the report and collectively, like, you know, this report is, you know, we've been meeting for over a year, for almost 2 years. And so not only were our relationships tightened, but also the shame was lifted. And in some way, it felt like in those moments too, we were holding the system to account, you know, because we are rebuilding our power and we are standing in our truth and advocating and truth-telling and screaming from the rooftops that this is sexual abuse. And it has, it's been a really fantastic experience to be in a collective and have these voices to be able to support each other through the process.
Well, the report is out. These reports take so long to get through that you just hope that the government of the day listens and implements change, particularly when it's uncovering such a tiny amount of contraband anyway. And as you mentioned, there are more less invasive ways of doing searches, like, you know, we all go through when we go to the airport with the wand or whatever. Do you have any, we're going to actually be talking with Sahini Mehta from the Human Rights Law Centre shortly on the program, Nina, and she'll tell us more about what's in the actual report. But is there a message that you've got for our governments and for, you know, those around the country who have been subject to this invasive process as well?
Yeah, as you said, you know, Sahini, you'll be talking to Sahini, so she'll be talking more about the data in the report. And, you know, in some cases, zero items are identified, despite hundreds. And I just want to say, like, hundreds of strip searches taking place. And even back to that thing about, like, language, like, you know, we use language like contraband. However, contraband, like, you know, even if items like stationery, jewellery, food, tobacco, medication, those sorts of things are found, they're labelled as contraband, but our minds automatically go to dangerous items. So I just wanted to also flag that. And, yeah, I forgot the second half of the question, sorry.
Look, it was just a message for our government, but also, you know, people who have been affected by this practice.
Sure. I think, too, like, the Australian government has promised to end violence in one generation, and I think that, you know, we need to be really accountable to people in positions of power, and, you know, state sanctioned violence needs to be included in that. Like, how can we eradicate violence when we are letting our people in positions of power and authority sexually abuse people?
Nina, thank you so much for sharing your reflections on our program, and we hope that the report does pave the way for change within Australian prisons. Nina, thank you so much for your time on Law Matters.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Nina is Family Violence Justice Project Manager at Flatout and a member of FigJam. In a couple of moments, I'll be chatting with Sahini Mehta, who is a senior lawyer at the Human Rights Law Centre and who very involved in the compilation of this report on strip searches, a new report calling for the ban on strip searching in prisons, an unnecessary, deeply harmful practice. This is Law Matters. Stay tuned.
Kaya, kaya nanonot, kaya nanonotet, nija buja, nala buja, nija buja windi, nija nalang dirt, nija nalang wanking, donjo yo, ni ngan wanking.
It's time to bring back the language with Joe Collard.
We're now going to learn some sentence. I am returning home. Nanya kala kulin. Nanya kala kulin. I am returning home. I am going to the shop. Nanya shop ul kulin. Nanya shop ul kulin. I am going to the shop. I am traveling. Nanya barangan. Nanya barangan.
Like a four-leaf clover, and I heard you like my style, and I like yours, so let's get together, baby. Baby, I feel like I'm calling, I'm calling for you. Baby, I feel like I'm falling in love with you. Baby, I never should have turned my head, 'cause you caught my eye and my heart.
Just thoughts of impress.
And the great sound of Alashay, You Caught My Eye, here on Law Matters, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Good to have your company. I wish we were talking about a cheerier subject on the program today, but we're not. We're talking about strip searches in Australian prisons. Did you know that there is no evidence of any relationship between strip searching and contraband detection? So why do they do it? I just spoke with Nina Story on the program, and great to give the perspective of Nina, and very looking forward to now speaking with Sahini Mehta, who is a senior lawyer from the Human Rights Law Centre, very involved in the compilation of the new report, which calls for a ban on strip searching in prisons. The report is called Ending Strip Searching in Australian Prisons. It compiles lived experience accounts of being subjected to strip searching, alongside national data on the prevalence of strip searching in prisons. Sahini, welcome to the program. Thanks for your time. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Jodi. Thanks for having me.
Well, what a busy time it's been for you and the other organisations involved in the compilation of this report. Sahini, before we talk about the process of putting together the report on strip searches in Australian prisons, could you just give an overview to our listeners of what the Human Rights Law Centre actually is and what it does?
Sure. So the Human Rights Law Centre is a community legal centre that uses strategic legal action, policy solutions and advocacy to support people and communities. I work in the First Nations Justice Team at the Human Rights Law Centre, which focuses more closely on issues affecting First Nations communities in the criminal legal system, so from police accountability to injustices in prison like strip searching.
All right. Strip searching in prisons. You know, you get locked up. It doesn't mean you don't have your human rights, but that is increasingly what we are finding within prisons around the country, that people's human rights are being violated. Strip searching in prisons is an unnecessary, degrading and deeply harmful practice that should be banned in law by all governments. That's according to a new report released recently by the Human Rights Law Centre, Flat Out, and the formerly incarcerated Girls Justice Advocates of Melbourne, Fig Jam. Tell me about the report, how one goes about compiling such a report, because I imagine it's quite a lengthy process, but also a very sensitive one where you're talking with people who might be triggered with what you need to talk about to do a report like this.
Yeah, I mean, the data gathering exercise, as you said, wasn't easy. There is very little publicly available information on strip search in prisons in Australia, which is a huge problem in itself. So what we had to do to get that information was make requests for information on prison strip searches to all the Australian states and territories. It takes a long time in general for all of the various authorities to respond to us. They often come back to us and we enter into this process of negotiating the scope of the request. We end up with less data than we requested. Some states like Western Australia didn't even provide any data for the 2021 to 22 year. They said there was no central register of prison searches. So we ended up with a patchwork of information that's quite hard to directly compare, but it's better than what's in the public domain currently. It makes a case for the authorities actually collecting this information and regularly publishing it. And, you know, whatever data we've collected, it shows that there's no real relationship between contraband detection and strip searching.
It's interesting, you know, you found that there was an average of over 15,000 strip searches conducted in adult prisons per month. You analysed data received under Freedom of Information from Queensland, Tasmania, Victoria, South Australia, the Northern Territory and the ACT. And Western Australia? No. No data from here in Western Australia. No data from New South Wales. Both told the report authors that there was no central register for strip searches existed. I mean, that screams alarm bells in itself, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, if these states aren't keeping proper records of strip searches and what, if anything, is found, then how on earth can they assess or maintain that strip searching is necessary? I'd say that, you know, the information that wasn't provided to us also paints that really disturbing picture as well.
Some of the data that you obtained to compile this report, I mean, we all know about the over-representation of our mob, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples within the prison systems across the country, but they're also disproportionately strip-searched, indicating potentially discriminatory treatment by prison guards. It must have been quite horrific seeing the data come in and seeing the stats for First Nations peoples, but also thinking 15,000 people strip searched every month and they're not actually finding anything. That's quite horrific, isn't it?
Absolutely. The data is very stark and the accounts of the people who've been subjected to strip searching was also really confronting. You know, in some cases, as Nina said, hundreds of strip searches found zero items. And in the rare cases where strip searches found items, they were often really harmless, like stationery, chocolate, jewellery. And there's no that the having a deterrent effect as well. So there was actually evidence that we pointed to in the report where in prisons they'd introduce this body scanning technology and reduce the strip searching. It didn't lead to any increase in contraband in prison. You mentioned that figure of 15,000 strip searches of adults in prison on average each month. It was also really concerning that the most recent data that we obtained showed that the most frequent reasons that were recorded for strip searches of adults in prison were routine reasons. So what I mean by routine reasons are things like, you know, when people enter prison or before and after they attend court or a medical appointment or escorts and transfers. So it's been not only being carried out, you know, without necessity, it's also being carried out really routinely and re-traumatising people, as we've just heard. You also mentioned just now, you know, the fact that First Nations people are disproportionately harmed by strip searching. We know that First Nations people are drastically over-incarcerated due to the ongoing effects of colonisation and systemic racism, and so it follows that they are being disproportionately harmed by strip searching. We also got some limited data on cultural identification, but where it was available, it showed that First Nations people were being strip searched disproportionately, even when you take into account their over-incarceration. So that could indicate discriminatory treatment. And there was also anecdotal evidence in the report that guards target people based on racism and misogyny, and that they have targeted people because they're Aboriginal.
Yeah, and, you know, I imagine that prison guards would have the discretion on who to strip search and who not to strip search. And it comes, sadly, as no surprise that First Nations peoples are over-targeted, as I imagine, you know, guards who hold, you know, views of racism or sexism or transphobia. It doesn't end well. We've got about 4 minutes left on the program. I want to talk about some of the findings of this report, please, Sahina.
Yep. So, I mean, as we've talked about, the data shows that the strip searchers rarely find any items, let alone dangerous contraband. We've talked about the lack of any relationship between strip searching and contraband detection and the lack of any deterrent effect. The practice is harming people who have previous experience with violence. It's re-traumatising them. It's experienced by people in prison as sexual abuse and as coercive control. All of this data is painting a picture of a practice that's totally outdated, ineffective, degrading and harmful. The key recommendation is a ban on strip searches and law in all of the states and territories. And we say that there's just no excuse for governments to use such a barbaric practice that can scar people for life in this day and age when we have, you know, those more effective and less invasive alternatives like the body scanners you mentioned that we see at airports and public buildings. You know, we've managed safety and security in other settings through less degrading means. So at point it's really difficult to understand why so many prisons in this country don't even have body scanners installed.
It is, you know, when you're talking about something that's discretionary and you're finding that, hang on a minute, all of the information that we've found shows that strip searching is not necessary within our prisons, but it is being used as a tool to for one person to assert power and control over another person who, in this instance, doesn't have any rights, any human rights, for the mere fact that they're locked up in prison. Absolutely shocking to hear that children are being strip searched in front of adult guards as well. It's horrific, isn't it?
Absolutely, and we know that there's a really disgracefully low minimum age of criminal responsibility across the country, where children as young as 10 can be locked away in prisons in most of the states and territories. So those children, being forced to bear and contort your bodies in front of adult guards is going to be a source of harm and trauma. And just shows you that prisons aren't a place to rehabilitate. They're actually places that cause harm. And that also relates to one of the recommendations in the report, which is a call for governments to really support people and communities rather than continually invest in prisons.
The report is called Ending Strip Searching in Australian Prisons. With about a minute to go, Sahini Mehta, where to from here? What do our governments need to do?
It's first and foremost, we're calling for that ban in law. And I would say that if people, including children as young as 10, were being forced to bare their bodies for inspection outside of prison, this would be widely recognised as a sexual crime. But because governments are continuously dehumanising people in prison, the violence of strip searching continues. Auntie Vicky Roach, who Nina just mentioned now, is a proud UN woman and a strong advocate for people in prison, contributed an introduction to the report. And in that she said, for us to be called human, we must respect everyone's human rights. And I think that's why we need to abolish the strip search prison law.
Well done, if that's the right term, but the compilation of a very important and comprehensive report. It spans 40 pages. People can go to the Human Rights Law Centre. Just Google Human Rights Law Centre strip searches. You'll see the key findings, the recommendations, a very comprehensive report. I hope it brings some changes to the law in Australia, Sahini Mehta, and we really appreciate your time talking about it here on the Law Matters program.
Thanks very much. And just a last shout out to please sign Big Jam's petition and strip searches in prison.
Good stuff. We're out of time on Law Matters. Thank you for your company again. Sahini Mehta joining us on the program today. And it's shocking, isn't it? Head to their website for more and find out about that petition. I'll see you in a fortnight's time. Thank you for your time.